Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Good to be with you.
It's been a couple weeks now.
Yeah, we didn't do one last week because of our snow day.
Yeah.
Figured people could use a little break from us.
Well, I thought about that. I was like, yeah, what do we do? You know what? And if you missed the podcast last week and you're saying to yourself, well, why wouldn't you have just had the podcast anyway? I would say because we didn't have any questions. If you have, like I've said before, if you have random questions about random issues or theological points or anything like that, send them in. We would, and then those are the weeks that we would probably have done that. Like, hey, let's address this question.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But no.
That could be our call-in show.
Right.
Caller number four.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's we didn't. Good. So we hope you didn't miss us too much, but we're back. We're excited to be back another week.
Is it a good way to start a podcast by chastising the audience?
Well, this is your fault. Trying to redirect us there, Jay. Trying to get us off that point.
For the three people who take me literally know that I'm not actually blaming you for us not having
May podcasts. Your days be guilt-ridden. Yeah.
I blame Jeff.
Yeah. But here we are, so let's do it.
Let's do it.
This has been like a really exciting few weeks at church too. Like the women's conference was this last weekend, the men's conference is this coming weekend. Hey, if you're a man hearing this, come to the men's conference. It's not too late to register. We'd love to have you.
Well, it depends on when they're listening to this.
That's true.
But if you're listening to this
pre-Saturday, the whatever date that is, this Saturday, I don't have the date ahead of my
pre-Saturday, this Saturday. That's great, man. That's super helpful.
Do you have it now?
Would you like some help?
Do it.
Yeah. It's the 12th.
Saturday the 12th. So if you get this before the 12th, if you get it midday, still come.
Of April.
Still come. We'll be here.
2025.
But we want you to come. This morning I was praying for each guy who's going to be there, that God would just be stirring in their hearts this week and preparing each one of us for what he would do. I just love that chance just to be together for that extended amount of time. It's really a gift and a privilege to get to be together without really anything else happening. You know, we just get to be together. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And this year's laid out a little differently. So we're trying something a little different. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be great.
So if you like change, you definitely want to come. If you hated the men's conference of the past, you'll definitely want to come.
Yeah.
And if you've loved it in the past, it'll basically be the same, don't worry. But different. I wish that people could see my face right now when I say things like that.
Yeah, well, me too. We should. I do think we should do video.
Oh, I thought you said
I think that'd be really funny.
I had pretty strong feedback when I said we talked about doing a video podcast. Pretty strong feedback of people saying don't do that.
Oh, really?
I was trying not to be offended.
I did not get that feedback, but
we don't want to see
your
face.
I just would like a camera that I could look into.
I know you want to be able to look at the camera when
Jay makes a comment, and I just stare into this. Like, did you hear that? What he said?
Well, not today.
We have questions today. Did you want to start with the questions, Jay, or where do you want to start? We're excited because we have two questions that were sent in, and we want to address those. But where do you think we should start?
That's a great question. So we were talking about Jesus being our great high priest.
Yep. Hebrews 4.
Let's jump in with questions.
I think that'd be really fun. I mean, one thing that I could just say, just to get people, you know, sometimes we just need a refresher. The thing that struck me so much about this sermon, Jay, and the end of Hebrews 4, and then really the beginning of 5 too, with Jesus being the high priest, was that the point about that he passes through the heavens and he comes to us. He pursues us to where we are with his incarnation. And that is just such an amazing, beautiful picture for us. I think not only of how God is towards us, that he's this pursuing, and the way he loves us is a pursuing love. He meets us and comes to us. But also I think an amazing example for us as we think about what does it look like to live as Jesus's apprentice in the world, that we are then also pursuing in love and going to where people are that we can love, not just waiting for them to present themselves to us to be loved. I just think, so I appreciated that point a lot about how Jesus does that. And he meets us really in our need before we knew we had need, before we desired any solution to that need. He comes and rescues us as our high priest. It's an amazing truth.
Yeah, it's obviously incredible. I feel like I could think on the idea of Jesus as our great high priest from now until I go to heaven, and I still would uncover just different angles and depths of what does that mean? You know, just how he hears our confession, how he makes sacrifices, how he intercedes, mediates, cares for the people, models for them. Like, there's just so many things that are just so beautiful.
And, yeah, his right now intercession to me is so profound. Like that,
right.
When you wonder, what is he doing? Well, right now he's interceding for us. That's what he's doing.
That's one of the things. Yeah. And we can't even fathom what that means. I didn't even get to unpack that a lot but I mean, you know, when he talks about being our friend and we have an advocate in the Spirit, like just this idea that God is for us, you know, in Romans 8, talking about that, of that God is not neutral towards us, and he's certainly not against us, that he's for us, he's on our side. And just imagine, you know, what it's like to walk into a situation where the one who is in charge, the one who has the power, the one who is, whether it's like a judge or a boss or whatever, that person is for you, loves you immensely, knows who you actually are, knows who you're becoming, is working on you. I mean, it's wild. Like, imagine going into a job interview where the person who's making the decision and interviewing you has been like your mentor for your whole life, who knows you better than anyone and loves you and wants you to succeed and wants you to get the job. What kind of confidence would you walk into, you know, that kind of room, that kind of situation? And yet I think a lot of times we are so timid because we function as though that's not the case, that we read a passage like that, and it's like what pictures in our mind is we have this great high judge who is really holy and is like expecting us to be holy or expecting certain things. And he's like, we have to prove ourselves. Like, he's going to say, well, we'll see. And that's just it's not his posture towards us. It's really incredible. So anything else before we get to the questions that you would...
No, I mean, I think the questions will help draw out too. I mean, I'd love to ask the first one, Jay.
Go for it.
That came in. And this one will really draw one of the main points of this passage as well. So here's the question. Describe the difference between fighting against temptation and going through trials. And I think, I mean, it's not noted in the question that was asked, but I think that's coming from probably like verse 15. So it says, I can just read it quick here. Hebrews 4:15, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. I'm guessing that's kind of where it stemmed from, and then a point that you were making in the sermon. So I want to give you a kind of first swing at this, Jay. The distinction here is the difference between fighting against temptation and going through trials. How are those different? How are they the same?
Well, I think they're obviously very related. We briefly threw this out there before the podcast. And so even as I was kind of just processing that on the fly, I was thinking, man, how would I, you know, I'll think of things and then I wonder, okay, is that true in all cases? And so I'm asking for grace that if you're thinking of a passage or something that you're like, oh, well, I don't know if that's always the case, that very well may be true. But I think to understand the difference between those, there are some things we do know about each one of those. So one is we know that God doesn't tempt anyone. Mm-hmm. So temptation is not something that God gives us, but trials often are. So, and so I think sometimes it's like, well, we have to define our terms. And so I wouldn't want to equate trials with suffering, even though trials, there's suffering in trials, and trials often cause suffering. But those are not synonymous. And the reason why I think that's important is because there's suffering we go through that is the consequence of our own sin, right? So if I make decisions and I do things that are sinful and then suffer because of that, that's not a trial, I would say. I would say that's something else. That's a consequence, you know, for our sin, which is certainly suffering. And temptation can come in the midst of that. But a trial is more, when I think of a trial, I think of like an illness or, you know, a brokenness in a work situation or in a relationship that was not, you know, not your desire or doing, a physical, you know, other physical ailments, sometimes mental illness. You know, think about Paul being imprisoned. These are the things that are referred to as trials. And then how temptations relate to that is in all suffering, whether trials or consequences of our own sin, we are tempted in the midst of that. Temptation is simply the temptation to give into our own desires rather than trusting God. So whatever temptation you have, temptation to sin is a temptation to give into a desire for something that is not of God, to give into the temptation to want to solve your own problem, satisfy your own desires, absolve your own fears, escape from your own trials, like any of those things. It's basically this, the temptation to say, I'm going to do this my way. Like, to really simplify it, temptation is, am I going to trust God or am I going to do things my way? And so any sin, whether it's, you know, an addiction or speaking a harsh word to somebody or, you know, behaving in like stealing or lying or any of those things, are you're tempted to trust in yourself and your own way of how you think this should go and how you will be fulfilled versus trusting God. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of trials or in the midst of suffering, we are constantly tempted. You know, if you have the trial of an illness, there are temptations in there to fear. There's temptations to become bitter, to become resentful, to think like, this isn't the way it's supposed to be, and so now I'm angry at God because this is what's happening. Those are temptations. There's temptations to become, you know, if you deal with a chronic illness, there's all kinds of temptations that are brought up in those environments. And so I would say, you know, just to kind of wrap that up, I would say that a trial is a circumstance or a road that you are walking that God has maybe placed in your life. And now your response in the midst of that is where the temptation and the faithfulness come. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, it does. I mean, I think when you get down to like what's happening in our heart, it's always this question of, am I going to trust you, God, that you are doing what is good? And can I trust you to provide, to take care of me, to protect me, to provide for me? It's those questions, right? And that's where whether it's a trial or a temptation towards something, a lot of times, and I think our heart, the end result needs to be the same. Do I believe that you can provide what I need right now? Or do I believe this has this desire in me for whatever it is, for control or for certainty or for knowing what's going to happen next, whatever it is. Do I believe that I need to act in a way that is outside of what your goodness and your will is for me to get that? That's a temptation. I like that you gave the one of even becoming like embittered. Because I do think that's one that many, many people struggle with. And that's the kind of the root of anger there. You start to, whatever circumstance you're in, you start to feel like this is not fair. God, why are you allowing this? Now, asking God, why are you allowing this? That's a really healthy thing. And we see that in the Psalms. How long, O Lord? They ask that and over again. But when your heart shifts to a place of pride and then anger, we're becoming embittered. And I think when we do that, we're forgetting that our circumstance, whether it's a trial you're facing, you know, some illness that you weren't anticipating, some situation that you didn't invite into your own life, someone else invited it in by their actions and so on. We don't remember in those moments that God is not done. Like that kind of bitter thing, it is a bitter thing. It's not good. Illness isn't good. That is not going to be the end of the story of what God is going to do with that. He always accomplishes what is good through those things. So yeah, I think I like that distinction, Jay. I do think sometimes there's probably some overlap. The example I was thinking about is Jesus being led into the wilderness by the Holy Spirit to then face the temptations that he faced. And part of me feels like that might be almost where they overlap, where that was a trial, I believe, as well as temptations that he went through. He did not do anything. He did not sin to bring that into his life. And I might be reading too much into that, but God allowed that circumstance. And yet in that circumstance is where he faced, and maybe just illustrates that point, that it's in the middle of the trial when we can be so tempted.
Yeah.
And I think the thing to remember is that is the moment when we're more prone to excuse our sin, right? It's like, because this is going on, of course I have to respond this way. And that can be the real temptation in the middle of a trial, right? It's just, this is unique. So of course, I'm allowed this.
Right. I would say that the temptation is the test. It's the thing we experience in the midst of the trial. So when Jesus goes off into the wilderness, I would say he goes to the wilderness and is tempted there. The trial is he's in this preparation time of, you know, fasting and in the wilderness. And so, yeah, I could see how like the whole interaction with Satan might have been certainly is a trial, but it's classified as a temptation, you know, and because it comes from the enemy. I mean, again, I think it is important that, so here'd be an example. You're dealing with an illness and you wake up on a morning where you feel especially like the symptoms are especially bad. And that's a trial. The temptation is to be overcome by despair, to just say, well, I'm not going to praise God. I can't, to give myself over to believe that, you know, am I going to believe and trust God that if I'm, you know, if I'm faithful, that I can endure this, I can walk this road and be faithful to Jesus. That's essentially it. I mean, our trials, the question is, will we remain faithful to Jesus in walking those roads of suffering, and meeting trials? So when we meet trials, as James says, of various kinds, with joy, well, you're able to do that because you know that God is working something in the midst of that, that he's producing something in you by walking that road. The temptation is to not believe him. Mm-hmm. The temptation is to sin. And so when people talk about like, oh, a temptation is this substance or whatever, well, no, the temptation is to give into that as the thing that will provide what you really need in Christ. So to deal with, to turn to substances to mask the pain that you don't think that you can endure, rather than trusting God in that, or to escape from thinking about, you know, things that are painful to think about, or whatever the case is. So yeah, we just would want to, again, coming back to the idea that God does give us trials. Like God does order our steps and does put trials in our place, not to destroy us, but that we would find life. He does not tempt us, though. He does not lure us towards darkness. And that's what temptation is. Like he does not lure us towards the enemy. He does not entrap us. He does not set us up for failure. He doesn't try to, he'll never mask himself as someone else, you know, like, for example, if I wanted to find out if my kid was, being honest and I say, hey, you know, here's this $20. I think it's your brother's, but you know, whatever, you could take this. Like, he wouldn't know. And you know, I don't care. I pay for everything anyway. That would be tempting my kid. That's not a trial. I'm tempting them. God doesn't do that. God would never speak to you and say like, well, hey, what about this thing over here? Like, doesn't this look desirable? Doesn't this look interesting? Don't you think you'd be happier if you had this? Or God doesn't do that. Right. So if you're listening to the voice of God, you can trust him. He is always calling you towards what is good. Now, you might have a trial placed in your life where you lose your job. And so now finances are like, you're going through a hard financial situation, and the temptation to look to money to solve your problems is going to be strong. But God is not the one whispering in your ear saying, hey, if you just cheated on your taxes or just did this, then you'd get a little extra. And that, like, does that make sense of like, mm-hmm. these? So the trial of being in a hard financial situation or a hard health situation creates an environment where there is temptation, where God is calling us to light and calling us to trust him, but the enemy is calling us to not, and our flesh is drifting away. And the question is just, how will we respond in the midst of that? And you made the point of like, that is especially hard in trials, mm-hmm. because we get very lax against our sin in the midst of trials. Mm-hmm. You know, we excuse all kinds of things when we are tired and when we are hungry, and we look at each other and we say, well, that's understandable. And I don't know, like, let's take a pause before we go to the next question. Let me ask you this with that. How do you walk that of like, so Jesus understands us in our weakness. So let's just take being tired and hungry, you know, because like you didn't have any food in the house. Maybe you're struggling to afford food, or you are going through something where like you had late nights because the kids were up late sick or whatever. And so now you're really tired and you've been sick, so you can't hold food down, let's say. So you're now tired, hungry, and that's, does not create a great environment to speak gently to your wife, for example. And so you snap at her. And all of us would say, you know, and your wife would probably say, if you apologize for it, your wife would probably say, I understand it's been a hard week, mm-hmm. right? Well, there's part of that that feels like what Jesus is saying, or what the author of Hebrews is saying, is that Jesus understands our weakness of our flesh. So there's part of it that is understanding our weakness, but then how do you keep that from going over into excusing or being a cover then for sin and a breeding ground for sin? Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It's like now you have this very, it's a little bit like when bacteria, like when you look at an environment and you're like, oh, that's really like lukewarm and wet. Like there's a lot of bacteria. That's like room for bacteria to grow. Well, I would say like our trials and in that particular situation, being tired and hungry, is now this environment where sin can really grow and fester. How do you balance that, knowing that's that kind of environment, and like we don't want to let that be a cover for sin, but at the same time also be compassionate and understanding our weakness?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, right? Because you need to hold both things. I think our response to someone in that situation is going to be compassion. It's going to be understanding. It's going to be mercy. And I believe that that's the way God's going to respond too. I think if our response goes further though and says, well, it doesn't matter, you know, you have license then in that moment to be extra angry, to, you know what I mean? That's not the same thing, but I do think we could trip over ourselves if we just say, well, it doesn't matter what circumstances they're in. And we've made this point before. So our circumstances that we are in, so like that example of being sick, all these things happen and you're just kind of at the end of yourself. So that circumstance is challenging. but it is not determinative. It does not cause us to then respond with anger. It doesn't. There's always going to be a choice in there, but that circumstance is still, it doesn't mean the circumstance is insignificant just because the circumstance doesn't cause it. So what caused it was something in our own heart, right? Some thing that inside of us was not right, where we were believing something about God that we ought not to, or worshiping something that wasn't God, our own desires. But that circumstance, when we relate with each other, is actually really important. And I think this passage here about Jesus sympathizing with our weaknesses, he's getting at that. He understands what it is like. And he understands, I mean, the way the Psalms put it is that we are but dust. And so you could take that truth, yeah, I'm just dust, so then I'm going to indulge in these activities that are sinful. That's one way of responding to that. Another way is just responding with, God, I need you. That's how much I need you. If I don't have your mercy and your help, this is what's going to happen over and over again. I need you right now. And I guess in the, just getting back to your example, Jay, that relationally, to me, what matters so much in that moment is what is that exchange between husband and wife? What actually happens there? Does she just say, don't worry about it, and dismiss it? Or does she actually see there was a sin committed, even though the circumstances make it understandable, but there was still a sin committed that needs to be forgiven? Because that's what's true, right? Like in that moment, what we need from God is forgiveness, and what we need from our spouse is forgiveness, even though our circumstance makes it obvious why that happened. We were more prone to it in that moment, but there's still a sin. I think it just helps us to be more merciful with each other in that moment and to not personalize it. Like when another person sins, it's hard to not make it all about you, the person sinned against. But in that moment, in that circumstance, it wasn't. It was about something inside of them. I don't know if that's helpful, if I just clouded it even more.
No, it's making me want to connect some dots here. I'm going to try to do this. I don't know how this is going to work. This is like half-baked in my head, but it's so obvious and so simple. So if you take that scenario, what should be produced in us when we look at somebody and we understand, when we can relate to them, and we can say, man, that's really tough when you're not feeling well and everything. And so we feel compassion, and yet we also say, yes, and you sinned against me, but I forgive you because I understand what that's like. That scenario is how Jesus meets us in all of our sin. But as humans, we don't do that. As humans, we often look at this, whether we think the sin is excusable or not. And then if it's not, like if it's just like feels like this was out of the blue and I don't understand why you would feel that way and I can't relate to that and it just seems ridiculous, then we become very judgmental. And that's very difficult to forgive. But the posture that you have towards someone, if you just imagine a person that you love, that you're close to, that you're for, that you think is great, and then they have a really rough week, and in the midst of that rough week, they say something to you or do something that it just feels like it's out of character for them or just is strange. The compassion that you would have on them, the understanding you would have towards them in that, is how Jesus, this is how Jesus feels towards you in all of your temptation. He's always there. That's like our best case scenario in that. But then the interesting thing is in those best case scenarios, we tend to just dismiss it. Like, oh, don't worry about it. Yeah. And to the point where we'd say, that doesn't really count as sin because it's so understandable.
Yes.
Isn't it fascinating that Jesus understands and has the level, even beyond the level of compassion, the most compassion you have ever had for somebody who has sinned because you so understand what they're going through? Jesus has more for you, and it's consistent. And it never then leads to excusing or dismissing the sin.
Yeah, it's amazing, because that's often the only way we can think of actually dealing with it.
Right.
So if it was a real sin, then what do I do? Well, that's forgiveness, right? That's how you deal with it. But it can feel easier to just get to the point where you think, well, yeah, given all the circumstances, that probably really wasn't sin. Well, no, it was. So that's what I would encourage us with. That's why it matters what basically what's the exchange there after that? And if the person, so, you know, another thing that can happen in those moments is the person who had the outburst of anger or whatever might not see it as sin in that moment, because we don't always see clearly.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Right.
And so I think if you're the one receiving it, that's where we have patience. And I think that's where we have this sympathy, this empathy and patience to allow that person time. That conversation can be had after things calm down. Sometimes that's the way we sympathize with the person, is to realize maybe right now isn't the time to insist that we resolve whatever. I guess that just, it helps you frame when you put yourself in their shoes, what it would be like. And, yeah, but I do think we need to not dismiss sin in the sense of saying it's not sin.
Yeah, it's interesting how often we relate compassion to excusing. I think that's just it. Like forgiveness doesn't even come into the play. It's almost like those two things never coexist in our minds because, well, I only think about forgiveness when it's something I don't have compassion for.
Yes.
When I'm really angry or really feel like this is an injustice. But if I feel compassion, then my sense of justice goes down because I'm like, you know, because it's understandable because I also, you know, have experienced that. It's just such a fascinating thing that Jesus experiences this great compassion for us and without his justice ever going, like that's what's so profound about it, to have compassion in the midst of something that you feel like this is unjust. Like what happened here is, this is awful. Like this is broken. This is sinful. And that your point about timing is well taken. I mean, I didn't put this, it was in my notes to just kind of unpack for a second of just thinking about what it was like for Jesus to walk the earth and to constantly be surrounded by sin and to be patient, to see so many things that he doesn't call out, that he doesn't confront because it's not the right time. Timing, think if you walk through the Gospels, how much Jesus gives over to timing. It's not my time. It's not your time. This isn't yet. It's not like he knows. Now that's his divinity kind of, I think, showing through of him understanding this kind of cosmic
yes
timeline that you and I don't have, though I think through the Spirit we have access to glimpses of that. We just don't have the sinless ability to understand it, right? And so yeah, you get into a little bit of the weeds of Jesus, you know, being both fully man and fully God. But timing, clearly, whatever you take from that, you have to say that timing matters. That when we say, well, when the psalmist says, "How long, O Lord," that God does everything in perfect timing. He's never slow. He's never late. And we've talked before about how Jesus is never in a hurry. And so yeah, you're right. That when that part of compassion, it does not mean excusing sin, but it might mean not confronting sin in that moment.
Yes.
Or giving space for the Spirit to confront. We all know, I can't imagine that you can't relate to this scenario where you've said something you've regretted and the person doesn't respond to it and just kind of lets it go.
Mm-hmm.
That always produces way more conviction. It leaves a lot of room for the Spirit to move. Like when you say something to somebody and they don't retort back, like that is the quickest way to feel like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. But if they respond with sin, now our sin is covering for each other and we justify it with their sin. Like we do a lot of like, well, now I'm glad I said that because, you know, you said this terrible thing to me. So I think that's just just not taking for granted how Jesus understands that and how in every situation, then you kind of alluded to this. So this kind of, I think, leads into the other question that we got of, it's not a foregone conclusion that, you know, so you wake up in the morning and you're sick, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're whatever. And so now you have these temptations that there is a way out. And that's our second question.
Yeah. So here's the question. God, so you mentioned in your sermon, you were quoting from 1 Corinthians. The question is, what is the meaning of God doesn't give us more than we can handle? So what is the meaning of that? And I have the passage in front of me here too, just in case.
I think the truth. Yeah. I gave you a different paraphrase or whatever. Yeah, but you the question it. Was essentially what that verse that I brought up, and I said, you know, this often gets misinterpreted as God doesn't give you anything more than you can handle. And it gets parroted all the time, and that's not really what that passage means. So the question came up of like, okay, well, what does that mean then? And I tried a little bit, but I actually feel like I didn't do a very good job of unpacking it in the sermon. So I think the question is warranted. And it's like, they could go back and listen to the sermon. I think they'd still be going, well, wait, but what does it mean? So fair, very fair question.
It's a great question.
And so, yeah, why don't you read the passage?
So it's 1 Corinthians 10:13. It says, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. My first comment, that's a true statement. Now, I know that might be obvious, but as Jay and I now try to clarify, it's been misused. So that's what we're concerned about. But in our desire to clarify it, we do believe that as a true statement. And we believe that it's important to understand what it is actually saying. So Jay, I'll give you like first swing at this and how to frame it and understand it.
You gave me first swing last time.
You bet, buddy. You're up.
Oh gosh. Okay. All right. So yes, I think what's important is this verse reminds me a lot of Philippians 4:13 when Paul says, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. And how when people use that, there's an element of truth to the way that we paraphrase it, but then there's implications that are not. And so, you know, we paraphrase a passage and then that paraphrase gets removed kind of one degree. And then we kind of apply it in a situation that it doesn't actually apply in. And then you paraphrase that and now it becomes shorthand for this application that isn't actually the application of the passage, but then that becomes the thing that we parrot to each other. And I think that's it. So if you go around saying like Philippians 4:13, I can do anything. Like I can do all things. So that means my business will succeed and I can, you know, I can build this house. I can make these dreams come true. I can slay these giants. I can do whatever. And that is not what that passage, that mm-hmm. passage is talking about enduring all circumstances, glorifying God in the midst. They're actually very similar passages, actually. That passage is talking about enduring circumstance. I can endure anything. I can be poor. I can be wealthy. I can be rich. You know, I can be sick. I can be healthy. I can be any of these things. I can worship God in the midst of that. I can endure all those things in Christ because Christ is enough. He is everything I need. Well, similarly, and Paul wrote that and he wrote this. Similarly here, he's saying, the way this gets paraphrased often is God doesn't give you anything more than you can handle.
Yes.
But,
and that's the misleading statement.
That's the misleading statement because yeah. One, that's not what it says, but also it often gets meant as like, okay, I can, in a similar way to Philippians 4:13, I can handle it. I can do this. Well, one that gets the emphasis is on me. I can do this. I can handle it. But also then what does it mean that you can handle it? Does it mean that you can heal yourself of cancer? Does it mean that you won't be defeated by this illness, or you won't lose your job, or like you're strong enough? Like, so, you know, you just need to believe in yourself more. Like these are the ways that gets all twisted and runs awry. So let's like look at what it's actually saying. Like number one, it says, You won't be overcome by temptation. You're not overcome by temptation. I don't have it actually in front of me.
No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man.
I was pulling it up, but
and then the very next phrase,
yeah,
is, and which I think is like the key phrase here, is God is faithful. And it's interesting, even the kind of our repeated version of that right. statement, we don't usually start with God is faithful. at all.
Right. So
because it's his faithfulness is removed, because the idea is that I won't need his faithfulness because he's not going to put me in a situation that's more than I can handle. It's like,
right.
If you say that to someone and it doesn't imply you are going to need to trust deeply in him as you go through this thing.
Yeah.
You're missing what he's saying here. So because first he says he's faithful, and I believe what he's trying to communicate is like what we said earlier, sin is not a foregone conclusion. So there isn't going to be a circumstance that we are in today where we have no choice but to sin. That there's no good option other than to sin. What he's saying is there is. There always is going to be. Then it doesn't mean we're going to always pick that way.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that we are forced then. These circumstances are such that I have to sin. I have to do this evil. That's not what we're in.
Right. So imagine one of the illustrations that came to my mind. Imagine, like Lauren and I just had got away for overnight, and my oldest son took care of, like, hung out with the younger ones and made sure they got to school and did everything. He's perfectly capable of doing that. And when I left him, I said, hey, just, you know, make sure they're safe. Make sure they get to school tomorrow. Make sure the garbage gets out. You're good. And if he would have said to me, oh, I don't know if I can do this, I would have said, you totally can do this. You don't need me. Well, can I call you if I have any questions? Don't call me. Like, we're going to a concert, we're going to dinner. Like, don't call me. Don't bother me. You've got this. Because what I'm giving him is like, he doesn't need my help. I think that's how we often translate that when we say God doesn't give you anything more than you can handle. It's like he's given you this trial or whatever, and he's like, I'm going to be over here. You don't need me. You're totally fine.
Yeah, you're going to nail it on your own.
You're going to nail it. That's not what this verse is. No. It would be much more like if I said to my oldest son, you're now in charge of all this. Taxes are due next week. Like, you have no choice. Like, I'm going to be gone. You got to make sure that all this is taken care of. You got to do the taxes. You've got to take care of the whole house. You've got to pay the property taxes. You got to get a job. You got to do it. Like, well, in that scenario, if I said to him, like, you're going to need a lot of help along the way to like figure this out. But I know that if, like, as I guide you through this, you'll be able to, like, we'll be able to get through this. Like, you will get through this. You'll be able to endure this. You'll be able to persevere. But I'm right here with you. Like, I'm going to show you every step of the way. You're going to need to ask a million questions, but I'm not leaving you. It's much more like that, you know, where, and I know that's not a perfect illustration, but what you said is like, yeah, sin is not a foregone conclusion. So go back to what we talked about of like, you wake up one day and this chronic illness you've been battling is just the symptoms have flared up and today is a really bad day. God is saying to you in that moment, this circumstance that you're dealing with, one, this temptation that you have to just give in, the temptation you have to be overcome by bitterness and resentfulness and doubt and all that, that temptation, number one, it's common. Like, we tend to think that our temptations are somehow harder or worse than other people's temptations. And we often think that based on our circumstances. So for example, if I don't have money and you have money, like, what temptation could be hard for you? Like, you have mm-hmm. money, you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Or your marriage is healthy and mine is struggling. Like, what could you possibly have going on? With both Hebrews 4 and this, we see that every temptation, Jesus was tempted in every respect as we are. And then here we see no temptation has overcome you that isn't common to man. The same temptations are there. There are temptations to escape. There are temptations to fulfill desires apart from God. There are temptations to deal with fear. There are temptations to deal with justice. Like, these things are just, these are temptations and they're common. So your temptation that you're dealing with today is, there's nothing new under the sun. You're not experiencing something that is somehow like just beyond what anybody has ever dealt with. It's common. And God is faithful in the midst of that. He won't let you be in one of those situations. Now, is it possible? Like, do those situations exist? Yes. So you and I talked before the podcast. I mean, then we talked during this of Jesus being tempted in the wilderness. I don't know about you, but I've never known anyone who has gone out into the wilderness for 40 days and Satan has appeared to them and offered them the entire world.
Mm, no.
I think that when this talks about beyond your ability, God is a loving father who is growing us and letting us experience some things, but he's not going to put us in situations where it's just like, that's too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't, like a human being would not be able to resist. Jesus, because of his faithfulness and his sinlessness, was able to resist that. His ability to resist temptation is very, very high, yep. Way higher than yours or mine. And so when you think about things that you allow your kids, for example, to go through, there are things I allow my kid to go through. I know it's going to be hard, but I want them to trust through it. And then there are other things where I just say, that's too much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not letting you be in that situation because that's just asking. You know, I think about sometimes like with devices or whatever, like
yeah.
I'm just not turning that over to an 8-year-old and just be like, it's just too much. That's too much temptation for them. So God does that with us too. He knows us. He allows temptation. He doesn't tempt us, but he allows that those trials and those temptations to come into our life. But he knows us so specifically, so deeply. His presence is with us. He's never asleep at the wheel. He's never distracted by someone. He is like on you. Like he's with you. He's right there. And he will, whatever you're facing, you might look at it and go, I don't think I can be faithful in the midst of this. And he says, yes, you can. Yes, you can, because I'm faithful. That's what he said. Like God, exactly. God is faithful. Paul's saying, you get in that situation, sin is not a foregone conclusion. Yes, you can say the encouraging thing right there. Yes, you can forgive that person. Yes, you can do that. Like you can, because why? Because God is faithful.
Exactly.
And what you're tempted by is it's common, and God knows, and he would not have allowed this temptation in your life if it was beyond your ability to turn to him and just say, help me. Like yep. he's faithful to do it, and he's watching, and he is with you in it, and he's for you in it. It's not, he doesn't test you to be like, well, let's see if you'll do it. Like, let's see. He's saying, no. Like kind of like the kid jumping in the pool or like riding the bike and you let go of the seat and let your kid kind of ride. You're like, just trust me.
Yeah. I mean, it's meant to instill confidence in him, not self-confidence. So this is an interesting passage for me. It was one of five. I used to work for the Navigators for 13 years on campus, but before I ever worked for them, I met the first materials of theirs I ever came across were in high school. One of our youth leaders took us through some materials, and there were five verses that we memorized. This was one of them. And the subject of the verse was assurance of help in temptation. So what it is meant to do, I think, for us is to help us to be confident that when temptation comes, his strength will be enough in that moment. He's not going to give us more than he can help us with. That's what that means. Not that we won't face something that feels really difficult or that there's not going to be a battle. There really is. But we can be confident and that he will provide a way out, meaning he will provide a way to deal with that temptation, to do what is good and right. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, Jay, but sometimes, you know, the video we play in our mind of what we might have to do in a certain circumstance. So we're just, whatever it is, it's a hard circumstance and we start playing it out. And the only options we're coming up with are sinful ones. And we get worried, how will I respond to that? Or maybe we're anticipating someone else's sin coming at us in a conversation or something. And I think when you know that that's coming for you, this verse is meant to give you confidence that in that moment, he is going to give you, you know what to do. You might not know exactly what to say in that moment, but you know what to do, and it will be what is good and right and true, and he will give you the strength to do that because he's faithful. You can count on him. He's going to be with you in it. I believe that's what we're meant to do with that passage. It should really be instilling confidence. I can follow you. I don't have to know exactly the next step, but I know I can be faithful to you. That's my job right now. I'm going to be faithful to you, and you're faithful to me all the time.
And again, that's the key, because he's faithful.
Exactly.
God is faithful.
It's his strength.
So I love that. And you're giving an example there. I was thinking, so imagine that playing in your mind. Like,
yeah.
What am I going to do if this happens?
Yeah.
And, you know, we say that a lot to people who are on scary roads of don't imagine 10 steps down the road, like right now. Just go get the test results. Like just do that. You don't worry about it a year from now. Don't just deal with this. But I was thinking about that. Like, imagine somebody wants to meet with you and you know it's a hard conversation, and you know maybe they're upset with you for reasons that are unfair or unjust or, you know, whatever. The temptation in those moments is often to defend ourselves, to fight back, to fight fire with fire.
Yeah, settle the score.
And then as you imagine that conversation, you might start thinking about like all the things that they've done that, like, okay, well, if they bring this up, I'm going to tell them like, well, yeah, but you did this. But then in that moment saying, but is that how Christ would have me respond? So the temptation is to do what I think is right, what I think means justice, but the way of Jesus would be, you know, potentially to turn the other cheek or to have compassion, to spend more time understanding why they might be tempted to blame me for this, you know, understand their circumstances, to have compassion, spend more time imagining that rather than imagining what I might say to them or how unfair this is going to be that they're going to say these things to me. But all of that, then knowing, like, to not get to a place where you say, well, I just don't know how I could respond any other way, to know that in that moment, God will give me grace to respond in the way that he has called me to respond, that I have a choice. Yeah, you're right. Like, gives you confidence of, I know, because, not because I'm so confident in my own faith or my own maturity, because I'm confident that God is faithful. And like you said, I love how you started when we talked about this verse, started with, this is true. Mm-hmm. The statement is true. So I can be confident that God will be faithful in this. He will provide a way. He will give me the grace and mercy in time of need. You know, it might come up as mercy, like we, you know, in Hebrews 4:16, that he gives us mercy and grace in time of need. I think of mercy in a sense of that might be in that person doesn't go over the line of saying something that is just beyond, you know, beyond the ability. Like God, when you pair those passages together, you have to say God's going to be merciful in that he's not going to put you in a situation where now this is like, it's just more than anybody like could handle. That makes sense. It's oversimplifying it. But he then gives you grace. So mercy is that he won't let you be in a situation that's beyond your ability to handle the temptation by trusting him. The grace is the power to trust him, like the faith and what you need then to see. Maybe it could be in the form of discernment, wisdom, insight, where all of a sudden now, if you've ever been in a situation where you think like the worldly ways, you should be really upset at this person, but all of a sudden you're just overcome by compassion for them and you just see their pain and you see how scared they are. That's grace. That's God giving you the grace you need in the moment to see that person the way that you need to see them, to then be able to respond in the way that he has called you to respond. And that happens when you trust him rather than just giving in. If you just give in to your own fleshly desires, well, now you've rattled off the 10 things that they did to you. You've fixated on the offense that they've caused you and how you've been wronged, and you've spent all that time. Well, that's, you've given over yourself to temptation. And by the time you meet with them, you've given yourself over to that other temptation. You're not even hearing from God in that. But if in preparation for that, you are resisting that temptation and trusting him for grace in that moment, well, then you get to that place. And I've been in those situations where all of a sudden I'm like, I don't even know why I was irritated by you or upset. Mm-hmm. All I see is all I have is a compassion in this. And all I see is understanding and empathy and sympathy for your circumstances. So I think that's an example of that he gives us grace and mercy in our time of need. He is faithful. He will provide in a way of escape. Sin is not a foregone conclusion. And I think if you're just able to do that, like anytime you're tempted to just feel empowered to know, I actually have a choice here. Mm-hmm. And the reason I know I have a choice is because God is faithful. And if I call out to him, and he doesn't expect me to do that on my own, it's not like I have a choice because I can, I can gut this out and I can do the right thing. It's not that. It's, I know I've got help. Like I know he's there and I can boldly approach his throne of grace and he will dispense lavishly grace and mercy on me in those moments to endure things that I didn't think I could.
You have to do above what we could ask or imagine. Yeah. He accomplishes far greater. And, you know, our challenge is that we, and you talked about this in the sermon too, that when we evaluate our situation, we can often do it as if God doesn't exist and his resources aren't available. And so we become self-confident. We have all the reasons for that, our skills and the way we can think or whatever. But really the first thing we need to remember is that the difference between my old life and my new life is that I trust in a person who is faithful, who is with me. So no matter what's happening around me, he is stable. He is full of love and grace and mercy. He's my high priest and I can trust him. And that's, to me, that's really what it means to grow as a disciple of Jesus, is to grow in that reality in every aspect of our life. And what does it look like to trust him with a temptation, to trust him with a need I have, to trust him with a relationship that's not what I want it to be? That's what it is. It's in every area of life, learning God is faithful. I can trust him. And I think this verse is a great one to just know, because it's so clear that he is faithful and so tangible with where our everyday life, where we operate and the things that we face.
Yeah. And when you bring that full circle of just, so we have this great high priest, you know, this is why it's so amazing that he understands our weakness. He has compassion in the midst of it. He's faced it all. He knows there's no temptation that overcomes us that isn't common to man and common to the experience of Jesus. He experienced it. And so when we go to him, we don't go to someone who's removed, who doesn't understand at all what this is like or what I'm dealing with. We go to one who does know, and he endured it without sin. And I tried to, like, you know, again, kind of bringing that to a close, really tried to draw that out more, of just that simple idea of when I go to Jesus, I'm able to with confidence approach this throne of grace for help in time of need, because he understands and he's endured. So I mentioned that a lot of times we go to people who have struggled with the same things we've struggled with for understanding. But that's not often the best place to go for help to endure. You want to go to somebody who's actually endured it. Like if you're addicted to a substance, you want help from somebody who has overcome that, or somebody who's never in, like, there's an interesting thing of like resisting temptation without sinning. So we don't just get understanding from Jesus. We also get the plan of the battle plan, the scouting report, this is how you endure it. He shows us how to endure it. So think about personal attacks. I think a lot of people know what it's like to feel like you're being slandered. Well, Jesus, nobody knows what it's like to be tempted in the midst of being slandered, tempted to lash out, tempted to defend yourself, tempted to spread, you know, talk behind people's backs or whatever. Well, Jesus then models for us the way forward. How do you deal with that? You know, it's interesting when Jesus talks about the Pharisees and says what you would consider to be pretty harsh things towards the Pharisees, guess who's always there? The Pharisees. Even when he's talking to his disciples about them, there's a crowd there. Like he's not whispering about it, you know, around the campfire late at night. We don't see that. So he gives us a plan of like, well, this is how you deal with this. You can confront it. You know, you also can endure it. It doesn't consume him. He doesn't go around when he's healing somebody, or he's present with the person who's suffering. There's no sign that he's being affected by the fact that the Pharisees are there. The Pharisees are there a lot and he's not confronting them. Right? Like they're trying to make his life miserable and they're slandering him all the time. And yet he's very present with the people he's with. It's clearly not like he's able to resist the temptation to let them pull him off track or to distract him.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. So he shows us the way through it. So he walks the road. He understands how hard our road can be because of the weakness of our flesh. He understands the temptations we face in that. And he's also modeled the way through it because he walked that road. And now in the power of the Spirit, he empowers us to walk the road as he did. What a great high priest who's interceding on our behalf right now. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, God has made every provision, you know. And I think for our church, people believe that. It's easier to believe that sometimes when it comes to like, he's made provision for forgiveness of my sins. I think that's so basic in the way our church is. But it also means that he's, in the same way that he's provided everything that's needed to deal with our sin, he's provided everything that's needed to deal with whatever trial or temptation we face as well. It's the same God providing what we need. And we take hold of it in the same way. Just like we trust him for the forgiveness of sins, we trust him in the middle of temptation. We trust him in the middle of trial, that he's with us, that he's faithful. It's the same muscle that you use to receive that forgiveness of sins is what you receive for power and for energy for today.
Absolutely. Well, we hope that this has been helpful to you. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. Hopefully our processing this has been helpful as we were kind of walking through this, but this is how we do it. Like you have to be able to do this with people. And so we want you to be connected with others, that you can also process this with and get help, and that God can minister to you through them and that you can minister to others, like God can minister to others through you. So if you need help in doing that, like, let us know. Talk to us. We can help you get connected. You can email us at connect@faithpastorgo.com or talk to us on a Sunday. Or as Jeff said, if you're a guy and you're hearing this this week and that we recorded it, come to the men's conference. It's not too late. You can just show up and we can help you get, you know, registered and just take that step. You may not know what that looks like, but take the step to be with a bunch of guys who we're gonna be dealing with a lot of these very same issues. In a really practical way of what it looks like to trust God in the midst of temptation in really practical ways. So, thanks again. We hope, as always, it's been helpful. Until next time, grace and peace.